Coming to you now is Lahem Panim with your host, Pastor Cameron Urey, Senior Pastor and Bible Teacher at Renton Park Chapel in Renton, Washington.
Well, greetings. It's good to have you with us today. If you've been with us recently, you'll know that in our study of the book of Acts, we've at last come to Paul's arrest here in chapter 21. He's trying to build bridges. He's trying to discredit false rumors that are spreading about him and about Christianity. And it says, "Now when the 7 days were almost ended, the Jews from Asia, seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd and laid hands on him, crying out, 'Men of Israel, help! This is the man who teaches all men everywhere against the people, the law, and this place. And furthermore, he also brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled this holy place.' For they had previously seen Trophimus the Ephesian with him in the city, whom they supposed that Paul had brought into the temple." And it says, "And all the city was disturbed, and the people ran together, seized Paul, and dragged him out of the temple. And immediately the doors were shut." You know, some time ago on the news, following the Russian invasion of Ukraine, we saw a large number of Russian protesters who chose to stand up and peacefully, yet publicly, demonstrate their opposition to the war in Ukraine. Now, of course, they don't have freedom of speech like we do here in the U.S., and so Putin has been having these people quickly arrested, sometimes beaten, and then carried away to prison, where many of them could spend up to 10 years. And one image that was emblazoned on my mind was that of one of these protesters, a man who was picked up and held off the ground by a few of these so-called peacekeepers, as another peacekeeper ruthlessly beat him with a black baton. And the man was being held in such a way he couldn't even cover himself to protect himself or shield himself. All he could do was just sit there or be held there and be struck again and again. Well, that's the condition that we find Paul in at the opening of our passage today. The unbelieving Jews, they've stirred the crowd into an absolute frenzy, and they're beating Paul mercilessly. And they have no intention of stopping. They are intending to beat Paul to death. No trial, no imprisonment, no, they want Paul dead. Paul and the message that he bore was, in their minds, too dangerous for him to be allowed to live. Now, thankfully, God intervened before they're able to carry out their plan. It says, "Now, as they were seeking to kill him, news came to the commander of the garrison that all Jerusalem was in an uproar." Now, around the temple was built Fort Antonia, and they were supervising constantly to make sure that no riot would break out in Jerusalem, and especially the temple. And the commander of the troops at this time, he was a man by the name of Claudius Lysias. He was a commander of a regiment, which was a special group, part of a legion of Roman soldiers. And he was the senior Roman official in Jerusalem. In fact, the word commander, Greek, kiliarch, it means that he was responsible for 1,000 soldiers, a regiment. And so he was stationed at the fortress of Antonia. And it says in verse 32, "He immediately took soldiers and centurions and ran down to them. And when they saw the commander and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul." Now you can imagine how badly shaken, battered, and bruised Paul is at this point. He probably had to be picked up off the ground. But he's obviously a great physical threat to everybody around him, because it says, "Then the commander came near and took him and commanded him to be bound with two chains. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. And then it says, and he asked who he was and what he had done. And some among the multitude cried one thing and some another. And by the way, it's so interesting here how the initial instigators of all of this are now curiously absent. They've stirred the pot, and of course they are the true cause of the riot, but now they seem to have withdrawn. So you have this mob, this large body without a head, it doesn't even know why they're there. And because of that, the commander, he can't figure out either who Paul is or what he's supposedly done. And so it says, so when he could not ascertain the truth because of the tumult, he commanded him to be taken into the barracks. When he reached the stairs, he had to be carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the mob. For the multitude of the people followed after, crying, "Away with him!" Then, as Paul was about to be led into the barracks, he said to the commander, "May I speak to you?" And he replied, "Can you speak Greek?" I mean, this surprised the commander because Greek was the language of cultured, educated men, not common criminals, as he had at first assumed Paul to be. And it was an indication that he was from out of town. And yet Paul, he could be a troublemaker from somewhere else. Greek was very commonly spoken in Egypt. And so Lysias thinks he may be the then well-known Egyptian troublemaker. And so he asks Paul, "Are you not the Egyptian who some time ago stirred up a rebellion and led the 4,000 assassins out into the wilderness?" Now this Egyptian to whom the commander is referring had tried to lead a revolt against Rome. He had taken a large number of people up to the Mount of Olives and promised that the walls of Jerusalem would fall at his command and that the Romans would be driven out. However, Governor Felix, he swept in with a whole bunch of Roman troops, routed the Egyptian and his followers, and so many of them were killed. But the Egyptian escaped. And so the commander had thought, probably because of the violent animosity of the crowd, that Paul was this Egyptian. Now, Lysias describes the followers of this Egyptian as assassins. And these assassins that he's referring to were actually a terrorist group that had arisen during the time when Felix was governor. Their strong Jewish nationalism, it caused them to fiercely set themselves against not only Rome, but also against those of the Jews who collaborated with Rome. And the latter were in fact the primary targets of these assassins. Now, the word assassin, sicarion, it actually derives from the Latin word for dagger, sica. And that was for a good reason, because what these assassins would do is they would mingle with the crowds and quickly and stealthily stab their victims. And after that, they would do one of two things. Sometimes they would simply melt away into the crowd. But other times, they would be so brazen as to pretend to be shocked and actually join the mourners in order to escape being detected. I mean, these were scary, dangerous guys. And they would be particularly active during the Jewish festivals like Pentecost. And so this reaction from the crowd, coupled with the fact that these assassination attempts were common, it would have been very natural for Lysias to assume that the crowd had caught one of these assassins, and maybe even the Egyptian himself. However, Paul quickly dispels that idea. It says, "But Paul said, 'I am a Jew from Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of no mean city. And I implore you, permit me to speak to the people.' So when he had given him permission, Paul stood on the stairs and motioned with his hand to the people. And when there was a great silence, he spoke to them in the Hebrew language, saying, Brethren and fathers, hear my defense before you now. And when they heard that he spoke to them in the Hebrew language, they kept all the more silent. Now, speaking to them in their own tongue, it caused them to get even more quiet because it showed them that he was likely not a diaspora collaborator with the Gentiles, whom many of them had supposed him to be. And he addresses them in words that show solidarity with them. I mean, he calls them brethren and fathers, just as Stephen had done back in chapter 7. And here Paul says, hear my defense. And the Greek word here is apologia. Paul is making an apology for the Christian faith. Now, that doesn't mean what it would mean today, that he's saying, I'm sorry. No, apology comes from the Greek word apologia. It means to make a defense or to state the case for. In fact, it's where we get our word apologetics. And that's what's behind the admonition in 1 Peter 3:15, to be ready to give an answer to every man who asks you to give a reason for the hope that you have. Well, that's what we see Paul doing and throughout the remainder of the book of Acts. And as we'll see, he gives 6 separate defenses of both himself, but also of Christianity. The first is before an unruly mob here at Jerusalem. The second is before the Sanhedrin. The third before Felix. The fourth before Festus. The fifth one before Herod Agrippa. And the sixth one before the Jews at Rome. And so here we find the first one. He stands on the stairs and he makes his apologia to the people in their own language. And next week we'll see exactly what he says. You know, one of the things that we're going to continue to see as we move through these final chapters in the book of Acts, which focus on Paul's ministry in chains, is the truth that God will often use our greatest trials, our greatest tribulations, our greatest hardships to produce some of his greatest fruit. Mind you, that it was during his imprisonment at Rome that Paul wrote 4 New Testament books, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and Philemon. And you know, that makes me wonder if Satan didn't regret the many persecutions that he had helped instigate towards Paul, because of just how much fruit came out of those persecutions. I mean, whenever Satan sought to crush Paul, and really many of the early Christians, through imprisonment, through persecution, even death, all that he ever succeeded in doing was helping to scatter the seed that would further expand and strengthen the church. And Paul's life stands as one of the greatest demonstrations of that principle. And that's a principle that's true for you and me as well. It's often through our hardships that God can produce the greatest fruit for his kingdom. And so I want to encourage you today, whatever hardship you might be going through right now, don't linger for a second in discouragement. Know that God is using that hardship for his glory. And that hardship, if you let it, it will draw you nearer to him, and will help to bring about his amazing plans and purposes for your life, but also for the lives of those around you. And one day those sufferings are hardly even going to be remembered. I mean, I love what Paul himself writes in Romans 8:18. He says, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us." And so let's look forward to that future glory as we lean on God in the present, and as we trust in him and in his perfect plan for our lives. Let's do so. Amen.
Today's episode of Lehem Panim has been made possible by Renton Park Chapel, a church that is committed to the ministry of sharing the joy of hearing and doing God's word. and to the mission of bringing people into the life-giving presence of Jesus Christ in and through vibrant preaching, teaching, Bible study, prayer, and ministry to a world that is in desperate need of the healing touch of Jesus Christ. If you'd like to learn more about our ministry here at Renton Park Chapel, or would like to request any of our messages here on Lehem Panim, you can visit us online at rentonparkchapel.org or lehempanim.org. You can also find us on both Facebook and Twitter. We look forward to hearing from you, and thank you for listening. And may you know all the fullness of having in your life the bread of the presence of God.